I'm Michelle from the Starling Tribune, a proud member of the Gundagik Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GundagikNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey friends, Jordan Woods Robinson here from AMC's The Walking Dead and Blue Man Group, and this is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, grab some gluten-free non-GMO popcorn, and let's dive into the world pop culture bliss.
You're listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
PopX Cast. Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome, everyone. This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joseph Burke, and joining me here is my lucky ensemble, the Three Musketeers, ladies and gentlemen, Austin Burke and Lindsay Badger. What's up, guys?
Hello. Hey, hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you for asking, man. Man, I love you a long time, man.
I love you a long time.
You know, it kind of feels like it's been a long time. It's been a couple of weeks since we've been here, and my gosh, a lot has happened in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So the wife and I enjoyed a nice vacation up to the Smoky Mountains and had some wonderful hiking and some beautiful color fall foliage. Pretty awesome stuff.
Nice.
And awesome. And of course, we got to take in a really cool film called Blade Runner, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later, but So, Austin, what's new in your life? What, anything going on that's fun? College?
No, man. I went to college. Oh, that sucks. But I went to Kings Island a couple weeks ago.
I saw that. Did you do the Halloween event there?
We did the Halloween events. We did all the haunted houses. We got chased around by some crazy people. I realized this. I don't get scared. Like, movies, they don't scare me. And the people that were trying to scare me in the park, they would just run by me and scream.
Wait.
Austin, you don't get scared?
You can't go to a random park and chase people and call it a Halloween event.
Now, whether or not the people that were chasing me, I don't know if they worked there or not, but there were people chasing me.
Well, and there were people. It was probably the garbage bag that you had running with yourself is probably the one saying, you don't want to get captured by this guy. He's got some kind of weird.
Maybe I should have been scared after thinking about it.
That's cool. You know, I've never got a chance to do the Kings Island version of the Halloween. I mean, here in Orlando, we get Busch Gardens Hallow Scream, and we get Halloween Horror Nights at Universal.
Kings Island is in Kentucky, I'm assuming.
It is. Cincinnati, yeah.
It is. Yeah, since it's on the edge, baby. A little bit of Ohio.
It's right on there. You get a little bit of that Coveton in on the side, and you got a little bit of the Ohio River right into the mix of twins.
Come on.
Wow.
California?
Look at that.
California. Lindsay Badger, how you been doing?
I've been doing fantastic. I just got back from a road trip this weekend.
Roadhouse. I mean, road trip.
We did a quick dash up to the Kansas-Missouri state line area in the Joplin area and went to a wedding. Mm. It was beautiful. It was out on a ranch. They did an amazing job, and my daughter got to cut the bouquet, and then we turned around and came back.
Wait, your daughter caught the bouquet?
She did. So there is marriage in her future. Not her near future.
Okay.
I bet you're right. We'll see.
All right. You know, some cultures call it a bouquet.
It's a boot camp.
Kentucky lingo.
It's a boot camp.
Beautiful wedding, and they did such a wonderful job, and I wish them all the happiness in the world. They're a really great couple.
That's so awesome. Yeah, well, cool Team PopX. I'm really happy everybody's just doing well. I was actually shocked myself. I actually hiked 5.5 miles in the Great Smoky Mountains.
Boom. I saw those awesome pictures.
Right in the middle of the Appalachian Trail. Here I am backpacking it right through the middle. It's like 4A. It was about 4.5 miles, and then we had to hike back 1.5 miles. It was crazy. But anyway, it was fun. It was fun. It was good times. But let's get this show started. What do you say? You ready? Okay, anyway. All right, guys, we'd like to welcome everyone viewing our live stream right here on YouTube. And I want to say, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joseph Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. Now, we'd like to welcome everyone joining us live on the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. If you guys missed episode 63, Retro Blasting Returns, check our official website at popxcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX.
And I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okie. Be sure you head over to the Google Play or iTunes after our show tonight and click that subscribe button. Make sure you catch up on all of our other shows from the PopX archive. And while you're there, we'd certainly appreciate you showing us some love by leaving a 5-star rating and review.
That means five, not four. Okay.
Give us some love.
Give us some love. All right, guys, sit tight. We're going to do the news. Be right back. Don't go nowhere.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
All right. Now, before we get started, I just want to say, if you haven't visited PopX.live yet, we've kind of installed a new feature. So not only do you get to see the live feed, the actual stream that we're broadcasting right now, below that is an embedded chat room. So the actual chat room that we have on our YouTube stream is now embedded right there. So you, if you're logged into YouTube or Google, it will use that account. You can talk to us right here on PopX.live. So go to PopX.live and check out all of our live and future streams, okay?
I love you toys.
I love toys. Yeah. Toys are great. What's embedding codes? It's just an iframe. It's not that complicated, but it works.
I'm a big fan of code. I mean,
I like codes. Codes are good, James. All right, guys. So leading out the top one this week, the Punisher release date was revealed in a brand new trailer, which stopped toying with fans and finally declassified the much-anticipated premiere date. Now, you can catch it on Netflix starting on November the 17th, just in time for the Thanksgiving holiday. Gobble, gobble. So, gobble, gobble. So as November the 17th is the release date for Justice League, and Netflix has decided on that date to go ahead and do it with DC. Yeah. So they're going up against some heavy hitters here, and that's interesting. Both the film and the show drop on the same exact day. So thoughts, Team PopX?
They know what they're doing.
Yeah,
they know what they're doing.
Come on. Marvel, DC, and you know they want all superhero movies to flourish, but if they can just take a little bit of that, a little
oomph on that Friday night crowd, maybe.
I would be disappointed if they didn't have something in their pockets to throw down. You know,
oh yeah,
they've always got something to match.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, cotton candy or something like that.
Oh god, making me hungry over here, Jeff. Come on, man.
All right, so Austin, go for it. What's up next?
All right, moving on. So Sony has announced that it will be offering special bundles for Battlefront 2 for both the PlayStation 4 Slim and the PlayStation 4 Pro, releasing on the market next month. PlayStation 4 Pro bundle, which is likely to retail around $449. That's pocket change. The bundle comes with a customized PS4 Pro 1 terabyte system with Rebel and Imperial emblems.
Oh, that's cool.
As well as a controller to match. It also includes a copy of the Star Wars Battlefront 2 Deluxe Edition on physical disc, so you can jump right back into the action. If you prefer, there's also a standard PS4 Slim bundle that includes a typical black system, a 1 terabyte hard drive, a DualShock 4 controller, and a copy of Star Wars Battlefront 2 Standard Edition. Though obviously not as cool as the PS4 Pro bundle, this is great for those that are more on a budget. The bundle is likely to sell for $299, a bit cheaper than the last one. This bundle is set to arrive. Hey, guys, guess what? November 17th.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, okay, everybody, gosh, mark your calendar to get your nerd on November 17th.
This is the best day of the year.
It seems like November the 17th is shaping up.
Don't you guys love this time of the year? Because this is whenever they start rolling out all the Christmas stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
All of the awesome big ticket stuff for Santa Claus to bring along. So.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. How sexy is that system, that pro package going to be?
That's going to be pretty awesome. Well, Battlefront 2. I have a Battlefront 1. And Battlefront 1 was just truly awesome to be able to play a multiplayer. You literally run around on all these planets and you team up with other people, and it is truly awesome to play. So, and they say they have amped it up times 100 on part 2. So I'm super stoked to see what they're going to do with this.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we got a little bit more Marvel goodness coming at you. The new Black Panther trailer gave us a taste of not one, but two major Black Panther villains that will be capable of the in-Marvel Cinematic Universe. The Black Panther trailer offers fans their first look at Killmonger's golden jaguar suit, but also the first look at Ulysses Klaue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, played by Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, yeah.
Serkis. making use of his sonic arm cannon. At first glance, it almost looks like Klaue simply has a wrist cannon of some sort. A closer look reveals a weapon is not on his wrist, but instead comes out of his hand and lifts up to a mounted position for firing.
Cool.
Marvel Cinematic Universe fans likely remember that Klaue has an arm. His arm was removed in the Avengers Age of Ultron.
Another Star Wars arm gone.
Yeah.
Phase 2 had a lot of that, didn't it?
Yeah, they sure did, man. Yeah, so the reason we said Andy Serkis, for a lot of people out there don't know, he doesn't have a lot of roles that feature his own likeness. Most of what he does is behind. He's done Gollum, Schmeagol and Gollum. He did as well as Caesar from Planet of the Apes. And just
Apes. Caesar. Like apes.
Every time I hear Caesar, I have to say apes.
I just
no,
love
the guy, he is literally, I think, one of the most dynamic actors in Hollywood, because he doesn't just do the motion capture. Every now and then he'll pop in with his actual body and he'll actually act in movies. He's, I believe he was in the Devil Wears Prada, or one of those like romantic comedies in the early 2000s. I mean, he's done so many different things and his resume is incredible. And he is Snoke in Star Wars. This guy is just, he's, and in this trailer, he looked awesome. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. His voice. Oh, when you hear Andy Serkis, I mean, just remember how deep his was with Caesar. My gosh, it's just, what a phenom.
He's the best.
All right, moving on. Mm-hmm. We got some more Star Wars news coming your way with the premiere of the final season of Star Wars Rebels. We're starting to learn more about the show's ending and how it will line up with the events of the saga. Now, series creator Dave Filoni finally revealed some of his plans for the show, teasing that surprises and hinting at some of the interesting developments as the Ghost Cruise story comes to its conclusion. Quote unquote, he says, "I don't want this season to be one answer after another, but I wanted to make sure that there are some things that we've set up that we pay off and that you feel that you get some answers," end quote, said Filoni. Now, the shorter season will be a lot more different from the previous years in the series, with all of the loose ends that need to be wrapped up will be finally concluded.
Yes.
So, does anybody watch Rebels here?
I haven't.
You do?
I just recently caught up. This is a great show.
Is it?
It's a great show. I really enjoyed the Clone Wars and what it did, but I feel like Rebels is even delving into more of canon than I ever thought it would, or I ever thought an animated show would. And it really ties loose ends from, you know, Rogue One and up until A New Hope together. So I really recommend it if anybody wants to watch it. It's really cool. It's
a really cool
show.
Yep.
All right.
Well, I guess it's time to talk about one of my favorite shows on television.
Yes.
It's called The Flash, mm-hmm. and the second episode of the fourth season aired this past Tuesday, along the way, some fans have spotted some pretty sly Easter eggs. One of them being Batman. We'll talk about that. Okay. In the show, a control screen for Barry's new suit can be seen. The screen has plenty of categories, including typical things like comms, temperature control, and flotation, but the screen also contains a pretty unique feature, mm-hmm. Babel Control. Now, Babel appears to be a reference to the Tower of Babel, a popular Justice League of America storyline that ran from July to October of 2000. In it, Batman is shown keeping a large array of hidden records about his teammates. And if this is right, I believe there was an animated movie a couple years ago
that did this
comic book as well, and it was fantastic. And this includes how to neutralize them in a fight. Unfortunately, these files get in the hands of Ra's al Ghul, who uses them to attack and kill each member of the Justice League. So a pretty cool little Easter egg in a show that is full of Easter eggs. Have you guys had a chance to watch the first two episodes of The Flash this season?
Absolutely. I've watched it, and my mind was blown. They are going back to their roots with this season.
They are.
They're going back to their roots, the traditional way of storytelling. They're not trying anything quirky or campy or cheesy. They are, I mean, they're setting up the big bad already. And we've already seen him. He looks pretty wicked, right?
He looks so cool.
Yeah. Do we have a name for him yet?
I believe.
Isn't he like time something?
He's like the Thinker or something like that. Something, I believe. Yeah. It's one of the, but he looks, I mean, the
makeup is awesome.
On him is incredible.
And this futuristic world that he's placed in, too, it looks really crazy, like something out of Tron. And so we're seeing we're seeing this in Flash, so that's pretty impressive.
I'm going to need to go catch up. Yeah, I'm feeling like I'm missing out on a lot.
Yeah, you're missing out.
And I love Flash. Flash is one of my favorites.
I'm very fortunate to be able to be caught up on Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, DC's Legends, and I've already started Gotham. I have been busy,
See, I haven't even caught up on Gotham yet. I'm so behind. Oh, my gosh.
I'm too behind on Gotham.
Speaking of campy and silly storylines, we're going to talk about Deadpool for a moment. To celebrate the wrapping up of the production of Deadpool 2, the star and producer Ryan Reynolds shared a batch of photos from the Deadpool 2 set to Instagram, including a few that revealed the sequel's first Easter eggs. Among the photos released by Reynolds were two shots of the bottom of Deadpool's katanas, engraved in gold on the bottom of each hilt, respectively, was each sword's name. First one was Bay, and the other is Arthur. The names are a reference to the late actress. Oh, it's B, not Bay.
B. Arthur, yeah.
Yeah, it's B. Arthur, excuse me. Well, it could have been Bay.
Could have been. You're my Bay.
You're my Bay.
Bay.
And Deadpool, it could be Bay. You never know.
It'd be B-A-E, though.
So anyway, B. Arthur. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Deadpool is known for having an obsession, and arguably an unhealthy one, with the Golden Girls, with Arthur in particular. This fascination was referenced in the first Deadpool movie by Wade Wilson wearing a shirt with B. Arthur's likeness on it.
I gotta love it. I just love how he pulls out of pop culture.
It's just such a tiny thing that you can just go for affinity.
I know. It's a continual pun.
Yes.
But moving on here with the news, but there's actually a news hit that I was reminded of in the chat room that I wanted to talk about, but then I'll go on to the next one. Did you hear that there is a rumor that was slightly confirmed, and Darth, I think Baca and Colin Hill have been talking about it over in the chat room. Mm-hmm. Pacific Rim, which is the giant robot films, Godzilla and King Kong is expected to cross over all three super giant, what do you call them, those mecha films, you know, with a giant. It'd be interesting to see if that actually does come to fruition. Mm-hmm. Austin, what's your thoughts?
I heard this. It was a rumor. It's not confirmed.
Okay.
But the director, I believe... The director was caught mentioning it or bringing it up in an interview, also believe that they are with the same studio, if I'm not wrong.
I'm pretty sure.
If that's the case, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. And if they can find a way to do it, give me some Jaegers with some Godzilla and some King Kong. Come on.
Yeah, that'd be pretty epic. Yeah. Geez, it's like the Power Rangers of the infinite scale. But moving on with the news here. So the old way of watching television shows is kind of being replaced by the wide world of binge watching. Now, sites like Netflix and Hulu have made it easy for audiences to consume shows in a weekend if they choose to do so. And it seems plenty of people have did just that for Marvel's The Defenders. In a new report, Netflix has confirmed its latest Marvel series managed to charm fans when it dropped. Now, the site released a list, its list of most watched Bend original series, and The Defenders came in at third place. Now, the superhero miniseries pulled ahead of some of the major competitors to steal the third place, including Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life, and managed to come up to the top of the list with Fuller House trailing behind it. But shows like The Ranch and even Orange is the New Black failed to take over Daredevil's new posse.
Wow. Yes. That's impressive.
It's impressive. I mean, even though that the story kind of, you know, was not 100%, there's a huge demand for The Defenders, it looks like. So, that's awesome.
I mean, it could be a good and a bad thing, because the good, it's like, okay, that they're invested, they're watching, but then they watch it and they're not as impressed. Does that mean they're not going to watch the next few? I mean, what do you think, Joe?
Maybe that's actually a really good point, Austin. Maybe that's why they're amping up The Punisher so much to look like a totally BA film, because they're trying to win that particular market.
They are.
That's a good point.
Because if they failed to hit the mark on The Defenders, which I kind of think they may have just a little bit, they're going to have to pick up the slack. And you know, I think John Bernthal's version of Punisher is just freaking phenomenal. And so I'm excited to see what they're going to do with that.
And according to those new trailers, I think they're going to kill it, and it could be one of the best series they've had so far.
It could be easily, yes.
Moving on, we're going to talk about Star Wars. One of the biggest Star Wars questions has finally been answered when Ron Howard revealed the title and the logo of the upcoming Han Solo standalone film. So now that the film is officially titled Solo, a Han Solo or a Star Wars story, what do fans think? Well, judging by the response online, the reactions are literally all over the map. Some are marveled by how simple or obvious the title seems, while others are pointing out that it's rather ironic parallels to the last Star Wars story film. Either way, fans seem to be enjoying poking fun at or getting excited for this 2018 Star Wars film. So I will ask you guys, what do you think of the title?
I think it's so corny.
Really?
I think it's so corny. You could have done so much better.
Hey, Austin, when I'm at choir practice and I'm in the back, can you guess what part I'm singing?
You're doing a solo.
I'm doing a solo. Oh, Lord have mercy. That's funny. I don't care.
What does Austin think of said title?
Well, what do you think,
Austin? You know what? I actually don't mind it, because it's been rumored for a while, and I don't want him to go too crazy with it, like a 12-parsec battle in the stars, wind river on a mountain. I don't want him to go too crazy with it. And as much as I hate the Star Wars story subtitle, you know they're going to do it, because they've done it for Rogue One, and they're going to continue to do it with anything that's not a Skywalker film. So,
I'm waiting for Binks, the Star Wars story.
God, give me a Jar Jar. Give me a Jar Jar. Please.
Binks. I'm just messing with you, man. That'll make every Star Wars fan cringe in their underwear. I would
quit life.
Quit life.
Did you just say I would quit life?
Jar Jar colon that go on an adventure.
Jesus, Misa go on an adventure.
Misa go on an adventure.
Because you know their titles have to be a paragraph long with that colon shoved in.
With the Star Wars story.
Yes.
Wow. Gosh. All right. Well. All right, we're done. All right, guys, we're going to actually shift pages here just a little bit, and we're going to go and talk in about this week's main topic, which is all things Blade Runner. Now, this is going to be covering Ridley Scott's both versions of the film. Now, when I say both versions, respectively, Blade Runner 1 has 7 different cuts and variations. I'm not lying. There's a director's cut. There's a 2007 director's cut, a 2015 director's cut. It's crazy how many different
have like alternate endings.
Different scenes, different. He even went back and got one of the actresses that was from the original film, the Snake Lady from Part 1, and refilmed the whole glass shattering scene.
Wow.
And he did that just recently. And so it is really crazy. But you know what? Before we go any further, we're going to roll this spoiler alert warning, because when we go into 2049, We're going to probably drop some nuggets that if you've not seen the film, this might
we
be.
We have to.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When we drop the nuggets, I mean, I want to make sure that everybody is like on the same page because there's going to be some stuff.
Roll that beautiful warning.
There's going to be some endings and some spoilers that we're going to cover. Okay. All right. So don't go nowhere. Spoiler alert. Coming right back.
Danger. You are about to enter a PopX spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right. You have been warned. Lindsay Badger, you've been warned.
All right. All right. Let's do it.
Am I good? Am I in full frame right here? Am I flowing?
I think you're doing okay.
Okay. All right. I'm just making sure. Doing an internet check. All right. So for me, we're going to do something totally different here on the opening of this segment. And this is something I want to do before this film particularly is I want us to be able to talk briefly. I'm not talking 10 minutes. I'm talking very briefly. The first time you saw Blade Runner and what was your reaction? And Austin, let's do ladies first. Let's Lindsay.
Okay.
Go for it. When did you first see Blade Runner and what did you think after watching it for the first time?
From my memory, about a week before 2049 is when I saw it for the first time. I probably have seen like bits and pieces of it, probably like on HBO or something, but to actually sit down and focus and watch it from beginning to end, I wanted to make sure that I saw the original before I went to go see the new one. So my husband and I sat down and we watched it.
Right.
And that is a trip.
It's a trip. It is.
I had no idea really the full extent of what to expect other than I knew that we would be talking about androids and replicas and people that, you know, try to hunt them down if they're not the right model or whatever. So I kind of had an idea of what we were getting into, but if you were just passively watching this movie, you would miss so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh.
If you're watching it just to get to the ending, you're going to miss some of the most key elements of the film.
You have to not only pay attention to what's going on visually and you have to pay attention to what's going on in the music because the script alone is not going to give you the full story.
Right.
It's not narrated. It's not giving you big chunks.
Although there is a version that is narrated by Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. I want to see that one.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But, so you have to look for the clues and you listen and pay really close attention. And it's actually a really good story.
Very nice.
Yeah.
It was really weird. I walked away from it saying, man, that's weird. I don't know if that's ever going to be on my favorite list, but I appreciate it for what it is. It's a piece of art. It's a different style that I was never used to seeing before.
It is. Austin, what about you?
Well, the first time I ever watched Blade Runner was probably 5 or 7 years ago. It was when I was still in high school. I believe I was a junior or senior. And I actually watched the version with the narration. And I didn't love it because I felt like the biggest part that took away from the movie for me was the narration. I thought it was kind of feeding the audience and giving you things that, you know, first of all, some of the dialogue was so of its time through the narration. And some of the dialogue was it was just force feeding me. And I didn't love that. So I was like, okay, what's all the hype about, man? What is this? Then everybody online's like, watch the final cut. The 2007 version takes away the narration. It's a little bit better than the other director's cut, and it gives you some new elements that... Okay, so I watched the final cut about 2 years ago. I believe it was my sophomore year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it. I still didn't love it like crazy, but I really, really enjoyed it. And I can 100% see why this movie is one of the best movies ever made because I have seen everything in this movie before. But the thing is, the movies that I've seen all of these things in took those things from Blade Runner. Yep. From Blade Runner.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not our fault that we couldn't see it when it first came out, you know. But when you watch it, you can see where everything from all these different movies come from, and you appreciate it because it's just the first. I mean, it was one of the first great sci-fi films, one of the first great noir films, one of the first great films to do this, that, and the other thing. And it is really amazing. And then before 2049, I watched it again and I liked it even more.
Yeah.
Because upon rewatch, every time you watch this movie, I feel like it gets better. And I still, I'm not at, you know, the top of where everybody else is on this movie, but I do, I agree. It's a flaw. I think it's a flawed masterpiece. That's awesome. This is one of the greatest sci-fi films ever made. And I love it. I really do.
For its time, it really is outstanding.
Well, absolutely. Let me share with you my first exposure to Blade Runner. I was a senior in high school, 1998. And my teacher at the time, I was in advanced placed English. And so advanced English. And then my teacher was Mr. Jeffrey Surgeon. And we would watch these amazing films like Cool Hand Luke and then Blade Runner, obviously. And then, of course, we watched the Star Wars saga and all that. And we just kind of wrote about it and picked it apart, you know, from a directorial standpoint. As if we were producing it, what kind of lighting would we use? You know, from the blue lighting to the red lighting to the yellow lighting, what do these emotions capture, and what do these lights feelings, you know, what do the colors represent? And so I got to say, it was the first time I saw a film like this, and I was totally blown away. And then there was the soundtrack, Vangelis, his original score. And so that was the thing that was like, wait a minute, I've kind of heard this sound before. And I'm only like 17, 18 years old. And I'm like, what is this? And then this was before you could get on Google, guys. This was before. I mean, you couldn't, it wasn't like you could just, you know, Shazam it and find this name of the, we're talking 1998 here. Okay. I had to do some freaking research here.
Dig deep.
And old school, you know, magazines, books, and go to the library and stuff like that and find names. So I found out it was Vangelis, and then I remembered, oh my God, that's the guy that composed one of my favorite scores ever, which is Chariots of Fire. That is literally one of my favorite compositions of all time. And then
that's a good one.
It is a really good one. And so not only did Mr. Surgeon expose me to this amazing world of Ridley Scott, but this amazing world of music, and that it's not just limited to the area that I lived, which was Southeast Kentucky, but it's a broader spectrum of life and world. And so that allowed me to be able to compose music and actually start creating my own music thanks to the influence and exposure of Vangelis' scores. It was amazing. And so that was a very pivotal moment in my life, those 5 years from the time I was 18 to about 23. And so I have a lot of that time to thank to Mr. Surgeon. So if you're watching this, Mr. Surgeon, back home in Kentucky, I love you, man. All right. So awesome. That's pretty awesome, though. We all got to share our own experiences about it, and I think it's pretty cool. And let's talk a little bit about some weird facts about part one, Blade Runner number one. All right, so Austin, I think I got a couple. You got a couple here lined up for us, right?
I do. I have some very weird facts. So strange fact number one, every logo and company that you see in the original film, and there's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, TDK, Memorex, Atari, Pam Am, all suffered financial setbacks after the film's release in 1982. Now,
they call that the curse of Blade Runner.
There is a Blade Runner curse. If you look at the box office of the original Blade Runner, and honestly, the box office of this Blade Runner, not great.
Mm-hmm.
Not great. And I think there were financial setbacks for both the movie and some of the companies involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very big deal. And it's shocking to think, why do people not turn on to movies that are this good? Why? I mean, every now and then you get one. I know War for the Planet of the Apes didn't make as much money as it thought it would. And then now you have Blade Runner 2049, which is a callback to the original Blade Runner. And all the companies involved, I mean, you know, it happens. It's a phenomenon, but it happens. So strange fact number two, elaborate screen tests were done for the Rachel Sean Young character. Scott preferred an unknown actress and said that Young reminded him of Vivian Leigh. Young and Ford never clicked. Ridley Scott is said to have talked Young through her performance during the sex scene. Ooh, Scott told Ford to push Young against the window ledge, and because she wasn't expecting it, Young cried. She said that Ford turned around and dropped his pants, mooning her to make her laugh.
Oh, wow.
I would love to be on a movie set with her.
Got to see Indy's Golden Nuggets.
I don't think that was in the contract.
Oh, no, I think that was an actual bonus clause.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's in the contract.
You got to see Han Solo. So.
The Han Solo's devils, you know.
No, that's the sequel.
No.
Just a solo, Austin. Just a solo.
Oh, just
wait, wait, wait. So if they, sorry to we're going to interrupt this for a minute, but yeah. Okay. So if they come out with a part two of Han Solo's movie, is it going to be a duet?
Double or? Solo.
Duet. A Star Wars story. Instead of solo.
Yeah. It's good.
All right. Okay, anyway. We're going to continue with some more weird facts for you guys and kill the really horrible comedy act. Okay. All right. The term replicants was never actually used in the book Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is the movie mm-hmm. was based off of that sci-fi novel from 1968 by Philip K. Dick, upon which the movie was based. Okay. So Dick calls the stories human-like creatures androids or Andes, but the film's makers feared that the word would make it sound more comical, and on the big screen they decided to replace them out. So the replicants term was coined by the co-screenwriter David Peoples, whose daughter was studying replication, the process of duplicating cells for cloning, and as part of her microbiology and biochemistry course that she was taking in school.
That's pretty interesting.
That's where the replicant term came from.
And wow.
I'm
really
glad
wow.
they didn't call them the androids. It kind of.
Yeah, androids is just so universal. Replicants. Unique. You've only heard that word replicants in the Blade Runner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. All right, and so we're going to throw out another fact for you guys. The so-called Tears in the Rain monologue delivered by Rutger Hauer's replicant leader Roy Batty at the end of the film, an iconic sci-fi moment since referenced by anyone from the Weekend to U.S. sitcom community, was actually heavily improvised. Thinking the soliloquy in the script was overblown, Hauer cut out several lines and added in the most famous one of all by himself. All those moments will be lost in time like tears in the rain. Tears in rain.
Just give it up for Roy Batty. Roy Batty and one lone dove flying up to the sky.
Man. Oh, that's impressive.
Moments in time.
It's beautiful. It really was beautiful. That was a very, very nice moment
and
there.
That was a big, big ending. And I've got a couple of little kind of factoids, too, that we're going to pass along. Then we're going to actually start talking about 2049. But Blade Runner is based upon, as we talked about, androids. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Now, the title came from William S. Burroughs' novella, and that Blade Runner, a movie, which was proposed film adaptation of another novel, Alan E. Norse's The Blade Runner. So now that version was an adaptation of another novel, so they had to get permission to be able to use the name Blade Runner for this version, if that makes sense. So somebody had already wrote a novel called Blade Runner. Interesting little thing. Now, something that I noticed, and I don't know if you guys have ever noticed this. If you've ever paused a frame in Blade Runner and you've seen like light poles and they look like eyes, I want to say almost like feline eyes, but even all the light poles. Now, the use of eyes for lighting was an aesthetic that was basically used throughout the entire duration of the film, throughout many of the original film street shots. And the focus on the eyes kind of like, we always heard that the eyes are the windows to the soul, right? And so if you notice, there's a lot of focus. Even in the opening scenes, you get the pupil completely, you know, wide open and the explosions going off in the iris. And you see that. And so you're right off the bat, you're seeing the eye close up in the first few frames of the film. And even right down to the street poles and the lamps, and even right down to that little flicker in the replicant's eye in certain scenes, like between when Rachel and Deckard are in his apartment and they're talking and he's, you know, wiping his mouth from the blood. He just got done with a fight. And you see that flicker in Rachel's eye. It's like a green flicker. It kind of was a way that Ridley Scott rigged up a lighting camera that would kind of make the iris twinkle a little bit. And that was an actual intended effect to let you know that Sean Young, Rachel, was a replicant. Really interesting, cool. If you think about it, how they set up those shots. Awesome. And this was 1982. I mean, you got to remember, this is like, holy cow, this is 25 years or 30 years?
Oh, man.
I think it's 25th anniversary, right? 92, 2002, 30th.
Everybody get your mask. Oh my goodness.
I know. It's crazy. So you think about how if you've had the blessing and the pleasure to see Blade Runner in 4K, I got it. I'll be honest with you. I've had the blessing to do it. I've got it right here. Honestly, the visual effects that Ridley Scott pulled off are holding up even today.
Amazing.
I mean, it's amazing the models he did for the Tyrell Corporation and just some of the shots. Dude, this wasn't CGI. This was models.
That was like a full table, like banquet-sized table full of models.
Dude, it is unreal what they did with
this. Unreal.
Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about 2049, guys. Going into the theater, of course, I know I watched the original the night before I went and saw part two. And so I want to know, Austin, we'll start with you this time. What was your thoughts coming out? I mean, I want to hear everything. I want to hear what was going through your mind.
So Denis Villeneuve is, if it wasn't for Christopher Nolan, he would be my favorite director working right now in his prime. Because literally every movie he has done, whether it's Prisoners, Sicario, Arrival, I love all three of those movies. I think all three of those movies are close to masterpieces. So I was very excited for this movie going in. And of course, my love for the original Blade Runner had a lot to do with me being very excited. So coming out, I didn't speak for a solid 45 minutes.
Are you serious?
I may have said a couple words to Madison because she was in the movie too, but literally the entire ride back, I was silent, just
soaking it in, huh?
Just soaking it all in. Okay. And I took a couple days to just really hone in my thoughts about it. And I have to say, this is one of my favorite movies of the last 5 years. This is, to me, and I know it's a little early, but I would consider this movie a masterpiece. And it's very rare when you watch a sequel to a film that everybody loves, and one could argue that it is better. And there are a lot of people arguing that this movie is better already. Yeah, I think this movie is better. I think Blade Runner 2049 is a freaking masterpiece, man. It's awesome. Every part of this movie, and the only argument that I can make within my mind is that it might be a little bit too long, maybe 15 minutes too long. They didn't care. They said, we're just going to put the whole thing out there. We don't care if it takes theaters away from us and takes box office away. We're going to put out a 2-hour and 45-minute movie. And man, they did. The visuals, the color scheme, the acting. Ryan Gosling was amazing. Harrison Ford was amazing for the smaller amount of screen time that I thought he was going to be in it. He was incredible. I thought every single character in this movie worked for me. And there were some subplots that I didn't expect, and I was very emotional because of, and I thought the ending of the movie was just flipping an emotional gut punch.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that here in a minute.
No, it was so just, it left me, ooh. And I think the best thing about this movie to me was the experience in the theater. The score by Hans Zimmer was just,
it's not only one that you felt, you felt it physically.
My seat was shaking.
My seat.
It was shaking.
Yeah.
And it might be where I watched it in Cinemark XD, or it might be where the building was, there was an earthquake. I don't know.
Were you sitting on top of the subwoofer again?
He was sitting on the sub, yeah. he was Howard Stern.
I was in the corner just like, I'm very it hurts me to think that I might not be able to watch this in a theater again. So I'm probably going to watch it again before it leaves theaters. Yeah, this was an experience.
Yeah. Well, Lindsay Badger, I'm curious to hear what your thoughts were. Just kind of a synopsis thoughts of 2049.
I wasn't sure what to think about it because I was still kind of up in the air on how I felt about the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I liked it, but I know that I didn't love it. But I was like still marinating on the whole storyline and everything. And walking out of that theater, now I'm thankful that this is a date night. It's one of the rare moments that I get out with my husband. So I also have somebody to toss the conversation back and forth. So mm-hmm. we're just like, okay, let's recap what we just watched.
Mm-hmm.
And we go back and forth and we answer each other's questions. And we're like, no, it was over here and we did that. And, you know, so it was beautiful, but in like a dark post-apocalyptic way, because there is zero greenery.
No,
there's no life.
No, that's why they're an off world.
Trees and whatnot. Yeah. So you definitely get that darkness, that grittiness that, you know, that the first movie had, but you get a little bit more detail about the reason why
mm-hmm.
they're that way. Mm-hmm. And kind of get a little bit more backstory that connects to the original storyline. Now, one thing I will say is that if you have not seen the first movie,
mm-hmm.
you won't hate this movie, but you will be confused.
You will be. Yeah.
Because there is a lot of things that they don't give you a quick catch up. They just pick mm-hmm. right up.
Right where the second, 20, yeah.
30 years, there's a big gap
mm-hmm.
between the two, but they pick up right where it left off and they just keep moving forward and they don't give you any references back to Rachel. You just have to figure mm-hmm. out who Rachel is, and she plays a very big part without one. Even being yeah. in this movie. Yeah. She plays a very big yeah. part in this movie. And you have to understand her relationship with Deckard to be able to understand the ending of the movie. So you really have to see the full story to get the full mm-hmm. emotional concept and enjoy it to its fullest.
Well, that's, yeah, Lindsay Badger, you fired on all cylinders. I totally agree with you. You have to see part one. And I think that's probably the wit of the directors and the producers, because they're going under the assumption you've already seen this masterpiece, part one, in 82, from 82. And so you do have to see part one to be able to understand the connections and the connectivity between the two films.
Another thing, just real quick, is I also appreciate that it wasn't predictable.
Ah.
Yeah. So many twists.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. It led you one way and you thought it was going to be one something way. And you're else. Like, oh, yes. Okay, this makes so much sense. All the lines, you know, all the dots are being placed and the lines are getting connected. Mm-hmm. And you're like, whoa, what just yeah. happened?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love that that kept you stringing along a little bit. You picked up the breadcrumbs, but you didn't know where you were going until the very end. So that was yes. really amazing.
Well, already having an appreciation for this film, as I've said before, you know, from my teacher back in high school, having seen this film and knowing the original and having seen almost all seven different cuts and variations of the film, I remember sitting in there and there's some of the opening scenes when he's going back into the city, back into LA, and you just hear Hans Zimmer's score and just the sound. I can't describe it.
It's very, very powerful.
It's like Tron meets, I don't know.
Inception.
Maybe Inception. It is off the rails. I mean, it is just unbelievable. And not only do you take in visually what he created, the scale of these buildings and these holograms and these, oh my God, it's so beautiful. You are hearing it and feeling the bass and the resonance in your chest. And I think for me, having a film that takes those traditional barriers of silver screen and subwoofer and just boom, right there in the sweet spot.
Yes.
Holy cow. And I remember there was a couple of slow scenes, you know, trying to build the story up. And I remember just kind of the scale. I mean, there's some shots you see Ryan Gosling and he's just like a little dot. And you just see the scale of these giant cityscapes mm-hmm. that he's in. Phenomenal, phenomenal shots. And I just can't speak enough about it. I mean, I'm probably on the line with Austin on this one. I'm saying this is borderline a masterpiece. Because yeah. for someone that really truly appreciates film like I have, I've been raised on film my entire life, I see the quirks and I see the passion and I see just what Ridley Scott wanted to do here was not only answer some questions from the first film, but even raise more questions up about, okay, is Deckard a replicant? What the heck's going on here? And, what's the big picture? We still don't know. And I think that's awesome that he's keeping us on our edge.
Yes,
and not only he's making new questions that, you know, from the first one that we're all sitting there like, wait, What? And now there's 30 more years are going to pass, and we're going to be still asking these same questions. You know, and it's going to be like, holy cow, what did he mean in 2049? We may never know.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of Blade Runner.
So I have a question for you guys to answer. I want to know, I know the whole movie was great overall, but what was that favorite point in the movie for you? Mine was when he woke up, basically. Whenever Ryan Gosling went from being just an android or a replicant to actually realizing that he's more than that and waking up. And it's basically when he's sitting there going through the records, trying to research this kid that Rachel had in that whole research process. I really enjoyed that because it just showed him like coming to life.
Yeah.
You know, instead of going through the process and revisiting back to the police station every day.
Well,
and then just that light switching over and being like,
that's a good point. That's like, that's like an aha moment. You know, the hero has found out his destiny. And that's an aha moment. And so you think about that. Now let's set some ground floor here, shall we? All right. We're going to enter the spoiler zone. All right. So Deckard has left LA. He's on the outskirts in the realm that nobody will go to because of contamination and toxic pollution, which makes me confirm that if he's out there in that, he's probably a replicant because a human being can't live in that kind of environment. Just saying. So we have our hero, Ryan Gosling, coming in. He's a Blade Runner, and he's trying to track down some quirks at the beginning of the film. He's trying to figure out what is going on and who's behind such murders and stuff like that. And he's trying to figure out and get to the base of everything. Then he finds out that Deckard and Rachel had a child. Yeah. Now, that's not only does that defy the laws of science and physics between replicants, because they're not supposed to be able to replicate. Do you like what I did there? So it's interesting. And then this child was immediately whisked away by Deckard and Rachel from the eyes of the Tyrell Corporation and the Wallace. What is it? Wallace? Was it Wallace? Wallace Foundation?
Yes, Wallace.
And so this kid is under the radar. So nobody knows about it. And so Ryan Gosling is trying to reconnect Deckard. By the time we get to the third quarter of the film, he's trying to reconnect Deckard with his child.
Yeah.
All right. Does that pretty much set it up, Austin, or did I lose some parts?
Oh, yeah.
Good run through for sure.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, that's the premise of Blade Runner 2049. Now, one of the things that I kind of wanted to talk about was, let's talk about the ending first and foremost. Let's just talk about the elephant in the room. So he takes Deckard. Deckard is still alive. And he takes Deckard and to meet his daughter. Now, Austin, what did you think when you found out who the daughter was? What was that moment?
That was the moment when I looked into my soul and I said to myself, this is incredible because, you know, like Lindsay said, you go the whole movie, you think Ryan Gosling is, and we're talking about favorite moments. My favorite moment was when he's looking into that thing and he just flips out in front of the actual daughter and he screams and he realizes, oh my gosh, I am the son. And you go the rest of the movie, you're thinking
he's
the son.
Okay, let's go see Dad.
Yeah, I was on board. I mean, it was kind of predictable, but I was on board. And then boom, you just switch everything up and you find out that there is a colony of replicants that are about to rebel.
Yeah.
And you find out all of these things. And I love how this movie doesn't give you all of the answers to things that you want to know the answers to. It's like, why is the giant wall there? What is this group of rebellious people doing in the background? They don't want that. Denis Villeneuve and Ridley Scott, who did a wonderful collaboration on this, you can see both of their voices. Mm-hmm. They said, we're not going to tell you guys answers to questions that you don't need to know the answers to. We are here for Ryan Gosling's story. Mm-hmm. That's what this movie is.
Wow.
And we're going to tell you that. And all of this background stuff, it's awesome to see. But we don't need to tell you that.
That's
not
candy.
Important to the story.
I just want you to focus.
They want you to focus on the, and that's what I think a lot of movies are missing nowadays is a focus. This movie had that focus all the way until the end. And we're talking about the ending. I thought the ending was incredible. It was emotional. I did get teary-eyed. I don't like admitting that, but I did. And I thought Ryan Gosling laying down on that step just cemented one of his greatest performances of all time. And it cemented this movie as one of the best movies I've seen in a long time.
Cinematic history. It was.
And this is a movie that is not everyone and their grandmothers are not going to watch it because the box office was not as good as I wanted it to be. But it is going to be a cult classic and it is going to be studied for years to come.
And, you know, it was interesting. Sure. There was something, and maybe one of you guys can help me remember this part. I remember Ryan Gosling's character. He was it Q? Was that his name? Or was it K? K.
I had it written down. K.
It was K, a bunch of numbers.
Yeah. And so K has these visions of this wooden horse. And the wooden horse is kind of a staple throughout the film. Now, here's where it gets weird. Those visions aren't his. Did you pick up on that? Mm-hmm. Those visions are Deckard's daughter.
Yes. Yes.
Boom.
She implanted those right in there. Yeah, because she was the dream maker. She made all of the dreams for the androids, or at least one of the contractors, because she was a freelancer.
Yeah.
And so in the movie, she said, it's illegal to put real memories into androids, but really the best ones are real.
The best ones are real.
I love it how she was – this could be a whole movie in itself. Was she doing this because she wanted answers? Was she putting her actual memories in other people? Because you know Ryan Gosling wasn't the only one that had that
memory. Now you know we're going down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
We are.
Here comes Deckard Jr.
Ryan Gosling was not the only one to have that memory. There were multiple people to have that memory. Was she doing this because she wanted to have answers to things that were outside of that glass box?
It very well could be, because by this statement, she said the very best memories are the ones that you've lived. She could be having these moments. You know, she could be having nightmares about these memories. And the reason she put them out there into these replicants is to try to maybe, like you said, get an answer back, feedback. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this? Yeah. Who is this? Who's responsible for this? Why is this horse here?
And as Jen in the chat had said, that probably made her feel free, a sense of freedom, because she's literally a girl in a bubble. Yeah. So that was her way to escape, per se.
If you've actually ever seen some of my Blue Man Group pictures of the pink lady with the pink hair in some of the pictures, that's Miss Jen Shu right there. She's hanging out with me. She's from the Blue Man community.
Thank you, Colin, for correcting on the memory.
Well, you know, let's talk about another elephant in the room. I love how this conversation's going, and I know we're low on time, but is Deckard a replicant? Yes or no? And what is your backup to back up if he is a human or a replicant?
I always thought that he was one, so I can't argue it. There was never any clue for me watching it that gave me that impression. But
there's some if you watch different versions of, like, there's 7 cuts of the film. If you watch some of them he's totally human, but some of them it kind of makes him a replicant.
And apparently there's an argument on set too that I believe it's Ridley Scott thinks he's not, but a couple of the writers and a couple of the producers assumed that he was a replicant.
Mm-hmm.
Now me, I think he's a replicant. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the best point that's been made tonight is, Joe, you said a while ago, how could he live in that condition for so long?
Do you want to hear the proof?
Let's do it.
Do you want me to validate for you? Let's go back to Blade Runner 1.
Okay.
All right. So we have, I can't remember. What is the detective's name that always wore the fedora? Like, too bad she won't live.
And the little origami guy.
He did the origami. Yeah, the origami guy. I
can't remember his name now.
Oh, my God. Anyway, I am so sorry if I can't remember.
Maybe the chat can help us with this.
Maybe the chat. All right. If you remember Blade Runner 1, at the end, he put down a origami of a unicorn. Now, why did he do that?
Because it's like his call sign for saying, I know you're replicant.
Well, wait just a second now. Don't get ahead of me. I'm going to answer this one. Lindsay Badger's heard me talk about this before. That's why.
Gaff.
But,
his name is Gaff.
Gaff. Yes. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Colin. You rock. His name was Gaff. Okay. So Gaff, if you remember, Deckard is at the piano playing in a scene, and Rachel is asleep on the couch. And he starts playing, and then he falls off into a dream, and he dreams of a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would Gaff know that Deckard is dreaming about unicorns when he put down a unicorn saying, I know who you are, and those memories aren't yours?
Wow. Holy crap.
Boom.
Yeah, that's, I mean, so they lay it out like that obvious in the movie?
In
and
part
people
one.
Are still questioning
in
it?
Part one, yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. If you think about it, too, every step of Deckard's life, there was an origami figure. Like, there was a man with an arousing member as an origami, saying that he's got the hots for Rachel. And then there was another one of a chicken, that he's chicken, that he's not going to go out and find Roy Batty. You're chicken, and he's predicting his moods and emotions each time. So basically, Gaff knows something about Deckard's creation.
Yeah, and Jared Leto even mentions it in the new movie. He says, "Were those memory or was that love of Rachel implanted into your mind?" And then he goes on to say, "Or were you just blah blah blah?" But him saying, "Were those things implanted into your mind?" really, I think, raised a lot of eyebrows. And I think, to me, that was not confirmation, but it was just another reason to think that he is possibly a replicant. There are so many clues.
My God.
I think he is. Can
you believe we've talked 40 minutes on Blade Runner?
Know,
and we're still going.
Real quick, before we wrap it completely up, can we talk about the most uberest, craziest bad guy in this movie? Wallace was an insane person.
He was.
Wallace was pretty jacked up, and he was blind.
I thought his partner Love, I thought she was fantastic.
She was wicked. She was awesome.
Awesome.
Here's what I don't understand: if Wallace is blind, how did he know where to shoot and point the trigger to kill the Rachel?
He has
replicant.
Those flying robot things, doesn't he?
Oh,
they're kind of like, I would guess it's kind of like echolocation would be my guess.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Wallace was unhinged. He probably took a little bit too much of that future LSD and probably jacked
it. He was a little crazy.
Poor Leto. He gets all the psychotic roles, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. I liked him, though. I thought he was
He did a great job. I just have to give a little golf clap to him and his insane character. I appreciated it.
He's a weird dude.
All right. All right, guys, we're going to wrap this up, man. We could literally talk all night on Blade Runner, my gosh, what a fun show this has been. And we hope you've enjoyed the conversation, and hopefully you have been enlightened into the world of replicants.
Wait, are we doing scores?
Oh.
Do you want to do scores?
Are we doing scores? Rick? Just real quick, scores.
Okay.
And
I want
then
to
we'll
know
roll into
score.
That outro.
What do you want? What do you want with scores?
Lindsay, give your score. What'd you give Blade Runner 2049?
Are we doing 1 out of 10 or 1 through?
1 out of 10.
1 out of 10. Okay.
1 out of 10.
Okay.
8.2.
Mm.
All right. Yeah, Joe.
I'm gonna say a 9.6.
Whoa!
I gotta say a 9.6.
Dang, man.
Yeah.
I'm gonna cap it off with a 10. I'm
Whoa.
Going to.
Wow.
I'm going 10 out of 10.
Austin,
is
this...
Not saying it's perfect because no movie's perfect, but I'm going 10 out of 10.
Austin, is this the first film you've ever rated a 10 out of 10?
This is it, dude.
Oh,
this is,
my
this is the
God.
First film.
We are witnessing PopX history here, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Austin has gave this film a 10 out of 10.
That's
my
impressive.
God.
For Austin, that's impressive.
I'm not given a 10 in years. And yeah, 10. I'm going 10.
Well, you gave a 10 the last time you saw my badonkadonk, so that was really appreciated.
I don't know.
11?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the 12 okay. all day long. And
that's a 12.
All right.
Battered. All right. Anyway, let me get off.
Well, Joe. Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's wrap up this beautiful bean footage.
Yes, ma'am.
Wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. All right. So, guys. As always, if you see something exciting on the shelves at your local comic book shop or in the theater and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media with our hashtag YoPopX. Now, if you use a hashtag, we could use your post or image on a future episode of PopX.live. So, yo, #YoPopX.
Also, we are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network.
And while Austin pulls out the banjo over there, make sure you go check us out on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest. Everywhere we are at PopXCast. You can send comments and suggestions to us via email at popxcast@gmail.com. Also, for future and past shows, visit our official website, www.popxcast.com.
And I am Austin Burke at The Burkinator. Austin Burke on YouTube, where I do movie reviews and other stuff like that. And Google my name and find a picture of my head and put it as your background on your desktop.
Already have. Well, too late.
I mean, one step ahead. Oh my gosh, you can do that if you want. I don't recommend it, but go. You to each their own. All right, you can find me, Lindsay Badger, at LR Badger all over the internet.
And I am Joseph Burke at Joseph Burke Arts on the internet. And of course, hats off always to my amazing comrades by my side. Miss Team PopX, Miss Lindsay Badger, and Mr. Austin Burke, my cousin over here from Nether Regions Unknown in Central Kentucky. He is a fantastic specimen. He is probably the prized specimen of our family heritage right there, ladies and gentlemen, in one package. You're welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Mommy, do you want a biscuit?
Anyway.
Oh, cool biscuits.
All right, so that's it for this episode, ladies and gentlemen.
But we've got another one coming.
We do. Episode 65 is right around the corner on November the 12th. We'll be back in 2 weeks for Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
And it's going to be a different one. It's get ready. So this Thor is going to be unlike anything we've ever seen. So be ready for it.
It's going to be a hella good time.
Oh, my God.
That was actually great.
That was a hashtag nerd pun.
That was awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, we have had a bonus hit right here. Lindsay Badger has dropped it.
That's fantastic.
Okay. Oh, I don't know what to do now. That was pretty awesome. All right.
Say goodnight, Joe.
All right, goodnight, Joe. All right, we're going to wrap this thing up here. So let me try to do this here and then close this out. All right, goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
From everyone at PopXCast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on.